Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide.
Hee-haw, hee-haw.
To take you deeper in your parenting. The date today is May the 9th, 2014. It's very rare, Jeff, that I actually get to quote the date it actually is.
That's right.
And I'm not doing it the day before, so this was a little strange. Our topic for today is going to be, why use carrots and sticks if your kid's not a donkey? Oh, we did a little double play on that. We're going to talk a little bit today about, we talk frequently about the use of rewards, and we talk about the use of uncomfortable punishments to try to get our kids to do what we want to do. So if we want them to go potty in the toilet, then maybe we throw Cheerios in there, and then we give them an M&M at the end or something like that whenever they get it right. Or maybe we punish them through spankings or whatever else we're going to go. We're going to talk a little bit today about how the mentality of rewards and punishments can be slightly erroneous in what we're looking for out of our kids. So we're going to go through that here in just a minute. Before we get into that, some quick housekeeping. If you guys want to stay notified of all the new episodes that come out of the Real Family Guys podcast, simple, easy way, just like over at the Family Podcast Network, you go to thefamilypodcast.com over the right-hand side, enter your name and your email address in. When you do that, it'll put you on a very special list that makes sure every time Jeff and I pop out a new episode on Friday, you get a little email that says, hey, Jeff and Trey put out a new show. Here's what it's about, to make sure that you never miss out on that one episode. If you just heard, it could have changed everything. Guys, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, something that you want to ask us about, an article that you want Jeff and I to go over, or something that you want us to cover and what our thoughts are, hey, no problem. Lots of ways you can do that. You can always go to thefamilypodcast.com. Click on any of the contact buttons that are up there. There's several different things that you can do, including suggest a topic, leave feedback, etc. Go consider doing that. You can also email us at Trey Gibson at thefamilypodcastnetwork.com and also Jeff at texasfamilyinstitute.org. Now, you can also go to the SpeakPipe app. That means that if you go to thefamilypodcast.com over on the right-hand side, you'll see a little green button that says Ask Trey and Jeff a Question. Click on that little button, and whenever you do that, as long as you have a microphone connected to your computer or a headset plugged in or whatever, you'll be able to record a voicemail over the computer directly to a database that we can play here on the show. Consider doing that. It is completely free. It doesn't charge you anything. You can also get an app for your phone to do it as well, to save yourself any of the cellular data package stuff as well. Also, there's several other ways that you can do that, guys. You can also call us at 661-PARENT-0. That is right. If you're out and about, you just dropped your kids off at school, and you're like, oh, dang it, I wanted to ask Trey and Jeff a question, but I forgot, or I'm going to forget by the time I get home. Just pull out your phone, call 661-PARENT and the number 0. Leave us a voicemail. Remember to ask your questions in these cases first. Ask your question first. Trey, I had a question about, should I spank my kids? Then give your details. Always, always, always do it in that order to make sure that we don't miss it through call quality and stuff like that. All right, Jeffrey, with all of that out of the way, what are we talking about today?
Trey, today I cross a threshold. I cross a boundary into different phase of life. I have officially survived 13 years of parenthood. Today, my oldest daughter, Mary Hannah, turns 13. She's a teenager, Trey. Now, I vividly remember my 13th birthday because we had a and this may seem like a really weird rule, but growing up, we had this rule that you couldn't get a digital watch until your 13th birthday. You had to you had to be able to read a clock,
right,
you know?
And, right.
And at the time, now this is back before iPhones and cell phones and, you know, and wearable tech and stuff like that. I had my sight set on this Casio phone data bank watch, you know, one where you could like put phone numbers in.
Because
as a 13-year-old, obviously I needed.
Yeah, that's your little black book, man.
You know, I
Jeff,
I
you stud you.
Convinced myself that I needed this this watch, and so it was the only thing I wanted for my 13th birthday. And
I'm not allowed to drink coffee when you're telling a funny story.
So yeah, that was my 13-year-old experience. But yeah, today's podcast was kind of inspired a little bit by my sweet, wonderful, amazing daughter Mary Hannah, because even though she's just now turning 13, we've been experiencing a phenomenon of resistance, I guess, and it's pretty typical. You see it in a lot of teenagers that she just seems unmotivated. Well, that's not true. That's not true. She's very motivated to do what she wants to do.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Absolutely.
Less motivated to do things like keep her room clean and things that I want her to do. You know, get her homework done on time and you know, make sure that she's taking a shower and things like that that we do as just a matter of regular course. You got to get your homework done. You got to clean your room. You got to take a shower. But those are the things that she seems less likely to do because she wants to to draw on her graphics tablet or read a webcomic that she's really involved in, or work on her costume for Comic-Con that she's going to be going to here pretty soon as part of her birthday present. Those are things that she's interested in, she wants to do, and she's motivated to do those things. But where I as a parent and her mom and I kind of butt heads with her sometimes is where we have a hard time motivating her to do the things that she needs to do or that we think she needs to do.
Yeah.
And so I asked myself, what would it look like for us to kind of investigate and ask how do most parents motivate their kids? And I think it goes back to the title of our show today. Is that carrots and sticks approach. Either we want to offer them the reward and kind of dangle it out in front of them so they kind of chase it, or we want to, you know, hit them with the stick until they – well, not literally.
don't do that.
Yeah, disclaimer. This is
CPS
a metaphor. That is
worthy.
But yeah, we motivate them with some sort of uncomfortable consequence if they don't do what we're doing. So that's called the carrots and sticks approach, and it's how – it's really how you deal with a stubborn donkey, you know?
Yeah.
You either give them the carrot so they walk ahead of you and move, or they don't. If they don't move, you pull out the switch of brambles and you smack them with it.
So do you see what we did there? This was when Jeff came up with this title. He made this very multi-layered, because initially we had discussed maybe using the alternative word for that because it can fit, because sometimes our kids can be little alternative word for donkey, right? And so it was a brilliant concept. But we decided, some of you guys listen to this at home with your kiddos around, so we decided to go PG, well, PG, I guess.
So this is something I found that is very relatable when I talk to other parents, and want to go ahead and give a disclaimer that developmentally, the carrots and sticks approach is pretty effective. Especially with younger kids, because they are very motivated by praise and by reward systems.
Right.
So we're not saying this approach is necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, agreed.
But you're going to get to a point, I guarantee, as a parent, you're going to get to a point where what used to motivate your kid doesn't motivate them anymore. And you've got to be flexible in your thinking of how do I need to continue with my parenting style of using these extrinsic motivations for them, or is it possible that, you know, being good proactive parents, that we should start working on intrinsic motivation at an earlier age so that by the time they get to their teenage years, then they're intrinsically motivated to do the things that they need to be doing? So that's what we're going to talk about today.
I'm going to make kind of a segue comment here, too. I will go as far to say that I think with little kids, you absolutely have to use reward. You have to use a reward system with them, because the reality is when kids first come out, there's one skill set that just genetically does not get built into to the species, I would say. And that's the ability to focus on the objectives of others outside of themselves. I mean, when they're little, everything is about survival. They're too little to be able to to feed themselves and all that other stuff. And so that those first few years, it's absolutely a necessity. And so when we're first doing all this, whenever it comes to kiddos, you know, performing good behaviors, it is about assigning positive value to those, because at that moment, that's all they know is what feels good to me. And so to get those positive behaviors, to keep us from driving, you know, us nuts and those kinds of things, reinforcing those is good. But there does reach that point, like Jeff very well put earlier, is that we've eventually got to start weaning them off of that mentality that you must be given something good externally to be able to enjoy doing, you know, focusing on the objectives of others. And so today we're going to start talking about weaning kids off the carrot and the stick, and weaning them off the need for candy or M&Ms after they do something good, or you know, yay! I mean, you know, my 7-year-old just doesn't enjoy that. Anna doesn't enjoy that nearly as much anymore if we do a yay. Well, I take that back. She might actually. But but anyway, the idea behind it is, how do we get off of that? I think this is a brilliant topic, Jeff.
So as we often do, we were motivated by a couple of different websites, and we're going to go ahead and introduce them to you. And there are actually three that we're going to draw from today to kind of build our case for intrinsic and extrinsic motivational styles. The first one we're going to start off looking at, and once again, you can go to the show notes on the website and find these links if you're driving or listening to this away from a computer. But if you're at a computer and you want to type it in, the first website we're going to look at is www.family-studies.org. Motivating kids without carrots and sticks. So there we've got the carrots and sticks image again. Mm-hmm. And the idea here is that most parents have to constantly remind, nag, and cajole their kids about what they're supposed to do, yeah. You know? And we find ourselves threatening them with you know, consequences or removal of privileges like every 5 minutes. And then even after all that, we have to go back and we have to check that things have been done and that they've been done to our satisfaction, to the right way, right? And so the carrot and stick theory Sounds pretty simple. You know, you give them the reward and then they go for it, or you set up the consequence and they respond to it. That sounds really simple, but in practice, it is a pain in the butt, Trey.
I mean, literally,
because it requires us to be so involved that it's not – I mean, we may as well have done it ourselves.
Yeah, that's
pretty
right.
Much.
That's right.
So the problem with this is outlined in a book by Alfie Kohn called Punished by Rewards, and he highlights some other problems with the carrot and stick approach. So first of all, he says that the promise of a reward is also the promise of a punishment, right?
Yeah.
Implicit in every promise that there's a privilege is a threat that privilege or reward can be taken away, right? When we tell our kids that they'll get a gold star or some pocket money or more recently, like a Wi-Fi password, we're subtly threatening them that if they choose not to do the chore, they will be punished, which is why it's not really a choice, right? So we're setting up a kind of Hobson's choice of you do this or you don't. But if you don't do it, the consequence is going to be bad enough that you should have done it in the first place. So it's not really helping them to develop the ability to choose anyhow.
Yeah, the reality is that remember we talk here frequently on both the Real Family Guys podcast and Family Podcast Network that the goal of us as parents is to not get them to do the right thing. Let me rephrase that. It's to not make them do the right thing. It's to get them to understand why we choose. It's all about choice. And a part of choice is that fundamentally you have to have the right and ability to make the wrong one. Because if there's not a wrong choice to be chosen, then now we're getting deep into philosophy here. There's no choice involved with it at all. That's right. That's exactly right. And so we absolutely have to provide a kid to be able to, and I would, this is a personal thing. Maybe not everybody may agree with me on this, but I believe that we have to provide kids with choices that are outside of any external punishment that we can offer them. So in other words, they have to be allowed to make bad choices without us coming in and promising that we're going to spank their butt or whatever else, those things that we're going to do, because if it's not that, then it's not a free choice. And then our goal is, now that we understand that they have that choice available, our goal becomes to, as quickly and as efficiently as we can, explain to them why we as parents choose this as the right way to do it. And we have to make it convincing. We have to help them understand, because when we begin to do that is when we begin to connect the reward that they get, not on something that comes from the outside, but that feeling that you get. I think we were designed, or if you just want to believe that we're a random organization of molecules that started in a protoplasm, you know, millions of years ago, I believe we came together in such a way that we desire to do the right thing, that we desire to help and to do things for other people. And that the greatest feelings that we can get is whenever we've helped somebody else without necessarily looking for something back. And so that's where this is coming from, is this mentality of if we reward a kid, there's two sides to a reward, is that there's also that side that, oh, look, you did exactly what I want. Good job. But what if you hadn't?
One other theme that runs through both the Family Podcast Network and the Real Family Guys podcast is the theme of relationship. And the second point that author Alfie Kohn makes in his book is that using rewards and punishment ultimately can be bad for your relationships, because children often perceive that a reward means approval and that approval means love. And
that's
so
right.
Rewarding and punishing, or I don't like the word punish. Let me change it to my parlance. Rewarding and allowing consequences to happen for our children based on their actions can send the message that our love is conditional. Right now, obviously, as parents, we know that our love is unconditional. We're going to love our kids no matter what they do, no matter what they look like, and oftentimes no matter what they smell like. But whether or not that's the case, our kids perceive that our love is conditional when we use rewards and consequences that way. And so when children perceive that they're not loved, well, they tend to swing the other direction, and they make the poor choices, and then they're struggling to flourish, because when they make poor choices, they feel badly about themselves. When they feel badly about themselves, they think badly about themselves. So it's bad for our relationship when we are using rewards and consequences as our sole means of connection with our kids.
You know, I think this one's a hard one, because I know a lot of parents are going to run to the I'm going to call it a pseudo-natural argument that, I mean, if I don't punish my kid, like here's a classic that we talked about maybe this week on Family Podcast Network, but the spare the rod, spoil the child, right? That'll come up frequently, especially we've got a pretty diverse Christian listening audience out there that are listening to this, and that's one of the favorite ones that they go to. I mean, well, if I'm not punishing them, the Bible tells me that, in fact, I am actually hurting that I am, I, you know, it's, of course, spare the rod, spoil the child is not actually in the Bible. That was actually a poem that was written by another guy. Now, there is a scripture that alludes to that, that kind of leads to where we get to this on that, and I'm not going to go into the depths of that. But this seems very contrary to that. I actually think this is exactly right. When we use rewards and punishments, whenever we set up that you must do these things to get positives, if you do the things that I don't want, then you're going to get hurt. I mean, let's be honest. I would actually go back and correct and say, I think you had it right the first time when you said punishing. There in that sentence when it says rewarding and punishing our children is based on their actions, sends the message that love is conditional, I think that's exactly the word they chose, and I think that was exactly what they meant, and that's exactly what they were trying to convey. Whenever we give them good stuff because they do exactly what I want, and we hurt them in some way, whether it's, you know, removal of a privilege or an application of something painful to their butt or whatever else, then we send this message that there's only that we don't love. I mean, when we hurt somebody, if I walk up to Jeff and I slug you as hard as I can with malice in my heart to on your arm, do you feel loved?
No, that's not something that conveys love to me, Trey.
I think that's a fairly universal thing, with the exception of some very twisted family systems that I've seen, in the therapy side of all of this. I think that's pretty normal, and I think kids have a tendency to do that too. Is that when they get hit, I don't think they look at this. Maybe years later, like adults, we can. I understand why my mom and dad did that. Now, I don't think in that moment that they interpret that. Oh, my parents love me and they wanted to hurt me into doing the best thing for my life. I don't think they do that. And so that's why this makes me so nervous, is that when we get this idea that we have to hurt people that we care about to show them that we love them, I mean, that creates a very twisted sense of relationship. And I think it absolutely does wound a relationship, and it can set them up to have wounding relationships for the rest of their life.
Now, once again, we want to emphasize that we're also talking developmental stages here.
Right.
And so this is focused mainly on the teenage adolescent mm-hmm. years, not on the very young years. However, I think the case that's going to be made here is that in order for us to have more success with our kids as adolescents, we need to start at an earlier age, transitioning from that Karras and Six approach to mm-hmm. to helping them find intrinsic motivation.
Right.
Which leads to the third reason that Alfie Cohn, the author of Punished by Rewards, says that the Karras and Six approach doesn't really work for our adolescents. Is that
it's one of my favorites.
When we use rewards and punishment as our central motivational modus operandi, our way of doing motivation, we fail to recognize that the reasons why our children may not be motivated are important, right? Reward and punishment at this stage becomes a quick fix gimmick. And what we need to do is we need to work at the root of the issue, because experience teaches us that quick fixes also come undone quickly, right? And so we need to go a little bit deeper and investigate, why is it important for my child to understand this? Why is it important for them to take ownership of it and find that intrinsic motivation instead of relying on me to set up why they should or shouldn't do something?
I tell you, Jeff, years ago we lived in a house that the MO, funny enough, modus operandi of the guy who owned it before us, was that he quick fixed things. and so I remember probably the worst one that we discovered was the quick fix that he decided to do when he needed to get under the house. So he cut this hole with a jigsaw into and he did it in a fairly obscure place. It was a very deep, large closet, but it wasn't like your front hall or something, I guess. But he cut this hole in there, right? And instead of going back and reinforcing that, which you need to do, brace joists, and you need to set it in there so that way the section that he cut out wouldn't fall through. No, what he did, he took a towel and he laid a towel over the hole and then dropped that section right back on there. So you're talking like if it would have had punji sticks in it, this would have just been a Vietnamese war, death trap is what it would have been. And of course, my wife fell through this twice, right?
Oh, no.
Not just once, but twice, because we were working and moving and stuff, and we kept falling through this little hole. But that concept, though funny, it is very applicable here, is that whenever we patch it over, and I love the analogy that they use here in terms of plastering it over, because that's what I think these simplistic uses of reward and punishment do, is that on the surface it seems as though we handled a problem and we spackle it over, mm-hmm. and we flush it out and then we repaint it and it looks like it's supposed to. However, when you put pressure on that section of that stupid closet, right,
yeah.
you were going to go through it. It was going to fall apart. And that's the way this is too, is because the reality is the things that these kids are going after, whenever they want to choose the wrong decision, in most cases, there's a really good reason for it, is that it's pleasurable or it's more fun. Mm-hmm. Or it seems to be easier, or it puts responsibility on somebody else. It is a very difficult thing to avoid. And so if we quick plaster and we make it look like it's supposed to, the minute that you put weight on that, just like that thing it did in that floor, it's going to fall apart because there's no foundation below it. And that's the idea that when we ignore reason, reason is the foundation of everything that we're talking about here. We do something, even if it's hard, for what reasons? And we have to make sure that we are conveying to our kids, why do we choose the right thing even whenever it's hard? Why do we choose to do the thing that feels right deep down inside to us, even when we acknowledge that it could be easy, and not only that, that we could even get away with it? Why would we do that? Why would we choose the harder of two decisions if this one even has pleasure involved with it, more simply? In most cases, the answer for that is because how does this help the needs of others? It doesn't in most cases. Mostly, typically, the shortest thing for me does not help the people around me out. But we have to get to that point where they have that foundation, or kids, when they reach that moment, who seem perfect and seem, you know, responsible, and they seem just absolutely ready to go. When they step on that and they have to make that decision, there's nothing below it to support it. They'll fall through and go ahead and make those choices all over again.
And the hurt that they suffer from that is oftentimes worse than what would have been suffered.
Great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. You better believe the second time we went through that wall, we actually knocked a chunk of wall out. So, yeah.
You know, I'm reminded of something recently where I was working with Ethan trying to help him with his intrinsic motivation. We got an invitation from his cousin to on a Sunday afternoon to go watch him play in a tennis tournament. And he specifically invited my son Ethan, "Hey, Ethan, can you come watch me play today?" And Ethan said, "Oh," he kind of hemmed and hawed and didn't really commit. And he's like, "Uncle Jeff, will you come?" Now, Trey, I love my nephew. He's a wonderful young man. I'm proud of him in so many ways. But what I really wanted to do on Sunday afternoon was was lay before the Lord, which is a euphemism for take a nap. And I'd just come off of about 12 weeks of Sunday afternoon things that we were doing at church. That this was the first Sunday where I wasn't required and obligated to be somewhere, and I was looking forward to taking a nap, right? But I told him, I was like, I'll come out and watch you today. And so he asked his cousin again, "Hey, Ethan, will you coming?" "Yeah, I don't know." So it was getting time to go, right? And I asked Ethan, who is playing on Minecraft and having a good time at the house. I said, "Hey, Ethan, it's time to go. Are you coming with me?" And he said, "I don't think so." I said, "Well, son, I'm disappointed because, you know, I think he really wants you to come," and yeah. He expressed that, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't want to, I'm not going to make you go. But I think that that your cousin's going to be disappointed.
That was the key. I'm not going to make you go.
So I got in the car and I'm driving down the road and my phone rings. I mean, I'm maybe to the stoplight, maybe, you know, half a mile away, and Ethan's on the phone. He says, Dad, "I changed my mind. Will you come back and get me?" I said, "Well, son, I already left. I'm gone." And he said, "Oh, but I'm sorry. So I'm being a little bit manipulative here. I mean, because I am. I'm laying it on here so that he feels the weight of disappointment here, right?
Jeff, you're so naughty.
But I said, "All right, son. I said, I'm going to turn around and come get you, but I want you to be standing out in front of the house because, I mean, we're supposed to be on our way there right now." So I swing back by to get him. But here's the deal, Trey. When we got there, I sat in the stands and watched him play, and he did great. He ended up winning the tournament, and so we're really proud of him. But afterwards, even though Ethan had played with some other kids and didn't really focus the entire time on watching his cousin play, just the fact that he was there made a difference. None of the other cousins or anything came out.
Yeah.
And so his cousin came up to him afterwards and gave him a big hug. And he said, "Man, thanks for coming out and watching me play. I mean, this is something he felt he was skilled at, that he wanted people to watch and be proud of him as he was proud of himself." And he gave Ethan a big hug. And as we left, I pulled away and said, "Now, Ethan, what do you think it meant to your cousin to have you out here supporting him?" And so then we processed, right? And I said, "How did it make you feel to know that you made his day by being out here and supporting him, and that he knows his cousin cares enough about him to give up part of his afternoon to come watch him do that?" And Ethan said, "I feel really good because I know that it made him really happy for me to be out here." And so then, you know, that was just the reinforcement for that intrinsic motivation. Why do we do it? Not because I was disappointed in him, because it was the right thing to do, and because of how it made him feel afterwards, right? And so this brings us to the fourth point that the author is mentioning here in this post, is that when we do use the carrot and stick, I mean, I could have bribed Ethan. I could have said, "Listen, we'll go out somewhere afterwards and I'll get you a Coke or something." You know, I could have promised some treat for him afterwards, or I could have made a threat. "If you don't go, you will not get to play Minecraft for the rest." You know, I could have made him by limiting his choices and exerting my authority. But that removes the focus on the task and puts it on the outcome.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? And so then our kids are not motivated for the task. They're motivated for the reward. And so – or they're motivated to avoid the punishment. So what the result is they put in the smallest amount of effort possible. They'll only – eventually, they'll only do what you ask if they're promised a reward or to avoid a punishment. And as they put in less effort and become even less motivated, you have to put even more reward in order to get them to do – what you want them to do. And so the carrot and stick approach, once again, it sounds logical, it makes sense, and it works to some extent, but ultimately it undermines what we're trying to do as parents.
You know, and I would say that most parents desire for their kids to get to that point to where they're able to look outside of what's going on. You know, they're able to look outside of themselves and say, okay, I really want my kid to want to help others and to be kind to others and to help others feel better about themselves and help others get wherever they want to be. And if you think about it, not only does that limit their ability to be able to experience those feelings, because if Jeff would have added the hey, you're gonna or else I'm gonna do this, or if you do that then you're gonna get this awesome ice cream at the end, there would have been at least some level of degradation, some level of attrition involved when it comes to that feeling of I did this solely because it helped someone else, because there already would have been that, oh yeah, but I'm getting ice cream out of this too. Some of that focus would already have been shifted on it. So I would even go as far to say when we focus on reward and punishment, especially in those older years, not only does it remove that emotion that they are able to have, it's our fault in most cases. It started with us, not with them. It started with us because we are not teaching the way that we want our kids, the way we say we really want our kids to learn.
So this article that we've been looking at talks a lot about this this idea of intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. And so I want to segue to another article from Psychology Today called "Surviving Your Child's Adolescence and Motivating Your Child to Motivating Your Adolescent to Perform." Okay, and what they do in this article here is they highlight what I was talking about earlier, is that adolescents are not unmotivated. The author of this, Carl Pickert, who's a PhD. He says that welcome to the hard half of parenting. He says what you need to understand is, except in cases of depression or some other disorder, I've never seen an unmotivated adolescent. Okay, teenagers may lack the motivation that parents want.
Yeah.
Right, we want them to try harder, to be a self starter, to care about doing well. Right, but they definitely have the motivation to do what they want. You know, things that make them happy and that they find pleasurable, or to avoid what they don't want, like work. Right.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, Trey, I get people that come to me, families that say, you know, our kids are just not motivated.
Yeah.
Right? Well, they're motivated, just not in the way that we want them to be, right?
Right.
And so they want me to fix their motivation, right? And so the extrinsic motivation question, how can we get our child to do something, right? How can we make or compel him to do things, comes up a lot. Or we have the intrinsic motivation question, well, how do we help our kid to want to do better for his or herself, right?
Yeah.
And what I love about this article, Trey, is that even though it's a lengthy article, as most psychological articles are, the outcome of it, if you go to the show page and you click the link in the show notes and go and actually read this article, because we're not going to cover it in depth here. But if you read the article, what my takeaway from it was, every kid's different. And every kid's reasons for doing things are a little bit unique to them. What motivates one kid will not motivate another. And what motivates your own kid at one particular point in their life may not motivate them later, right?
Yeah, great point.
And so what it really comes down to is, as parents, we need to recognize that this is not a one-size-fits-all quick fix. You know, all we have to do is work on intrinsically motivating our kid. When they magically get it, we'll never have to motivate them again. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Right? But he does have some suggestions for us to understand how motivation works. And so there's a discussion here that almost kind of puts it into a formula of how to look at extrinsic motivation in a healthy way and how to look at intrinsic motivation as well, right? So he sets it up as kind of a contractual way.
Yeah.
Extrinsic motivation that comes from outside of ourselves, a lot of times is a condition plus a promise. He says it basically goes like this. I will give you what you want if you do what I want. That's the condition and then the promise. Or I will give you what you don't want, consequence or punishment, if you fail to do what I want. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes we can get our kids to yield and consent to these bargaining tactics, and sometimes we can't. Right. It works for some kids. It works in some situations. But we've already talked about that our relationship can be undermined by that, and it doesn't really help them to develop that internal motivation stuff. So this is the carrot and stick approach in pretty good language right here, that condition plus a promise.
You know, the interesting way to think about this formula that I think is good is that if we consider how we're talking about this, and remember, a lot of times younger kids, they begin to connect reward with love. You know, whenever I do something I'm supposed to, I get a reward, and I feel loved by that because they're giving me things that I like or things that I enjoy. And then conversely, if they don't do what they want, if I don't do what they want, they give me a punishment, which does not feel like love to me. So you can see that if you fill that condition in, that if you talk about extrinsic motivation and you take that condition plus a promise, it says, I will love you. Remember, this is how some little kids translate this. I will love you if you do what I want, or I will not love you if you don't do what you want. Now, I know, guys, it's not logical. It's not rational. And I know as most of us and parents, if you're listening to this, already tells me that you have a big one up on how much you want to take your parenting to that next level. But you got to think, even outside of the most logical responses that our kids can have, that we can have as adults, kids don't often do this. And so under that, you can see how very quickly, if we're not careful, kids will begin to feel like they're not loved through this formula because I didn't do what you wanted.
Well, extrinsic motivation is not necessarily a bad thing, and there's a way to do it well. And so the author goes on to talk about a different formula for extrinsic motivation that might be more helpful, which is, instead of a condition plus a promise, a healthier form of extrinsic motivation, especially entering the teenage years, would be concern plus communication. So instead of, I will give you what you want if you do what I want, now we're telling our kids, basically, I wish you would help me understand how you feel about this so we can discuss it and we can work it out. So this is something that empowers our kids because it gives them a voice and it gives them some agency in their own outcomes. And so sometimes an adolescent can feel more inclined to cooperate because they feel less like they're the object of their parental control.
That's right. That's it.
And more like, well, my parents are concerned about me and they want me to succeed. Now, this isn't always going to work, and it's going to depend on your already established relationship. But the main thing to remember about extrinsic motivation is that influence is exerted from the outside in.
Mm.
Okay, which means the effort that the adolescent puts into it is dependent on that external pressure, and so that's different from intrinsic motivation that works from the inside out, where the influence generated independently from that desire within is what motivates them. Of the two kinds of motivation, intrinsic is obviously more powerful because the adolescent is the source of the influence and direction, right? But we're not saying here that we shouldn't try to extrinsically motivate our kids. We just need to do it out of a place of concern and not out of a place of control.
See, I think you summarized that beautifully, because there's one belief system that at least we've talked about, you know, here several times, is that I think a majority of problems that parents bump into with their kids operate from that one word. It's about control.
Control. Yeah.
I've got to control my kids. I must make them do what they want to, because when they look good, like out in public, when I make them do what I want them to do, it makes me look good. I think it almost always comes back to control. And that's why this idea of extrinsic motivation is so tricky. That's why I say I think rewards and punishments can be used in the younger years. I think it's possible. But what makes it impossible is if we walk to it and not under the mindset of, I'm trying to teach my kid how to do the right thing, what the right thing is to do, and why we would want to do that, versus I've got to make my kid doing the right thing because I don't want my kid screaming and throwing a fit in Walmart because it makes me look bad. So I must control that. Mm-hmm. Or I don't want them going and taking off and running around the house screaming their heads off because I must control that behavior. I mean, we're always afraid that if our kid's throwing a screaming fit and running up and down the aisles at Walmart, right, what's everybody thinking about us?
I'm a bad parent.
And you should get control of your kid, right? I mean, that's what it all comes down to. And we have to move away from this mentality. Number one, it's a lie. You do not and cannot control anyone. You know you can't control your children? You can't. You can manipulate. You can encourage. You can try to influence. You can even threaten them with a gun. But ultimately, whose choice is whatever decision that adolescent or that little two-year-old makes? It's always their choice. And if we can get that in our mindset, that we cannot control anyone, I would even go as far to say control in its fullest sense, except for how I choose to act, I would say control is mostly an illusion. It's something that we trick ourselves into believing that we have when we don't. And so that's it. Remember, it all goes back to the motivation, the underlying reasons for what we do, the justifications that we make up for those things. It's always back to motivation. And it cannot be that I'm trying to control my kid into doing the right thing. It has to be I must teach them why.
I often tell my kids, Trey, that that part of my job as a parent is to go from them being daddy controlled to being Mariana
right.
controlled or Ethan
yeah.
controlled or Ellie
That's
controlled.
Good.
And so what it comes down to is basically I'm trying to help them understand this concept of being intrinsically motivated, of that locus of control being within themselves rather than external.
Right.
It doesn't mean I'm not willing to help them or support them or encourage them. It just means that ultimately they're going to be successful based on what they do for themselves, not what I tell them to do.
That's right. That's right.
And so in the Psychology Today article, he moves on from talking about extrinsic motivation to talking about what intrinsic motivation is. And using that same kind of contractual language, he says intrinsic motivation, one way to state it would be that it equals self-interest plus ownership.
That's good.
Right? So they're saying, I want to take charge of what matters to me, and I want to be the one who decides to get it done.
Ooh, yeah.
I want to do it for my sake and not for anyone else. Right? Parents, and this is just what you were saying just a moment ago, he echoes that in this article. He said, parents cannot reward, push, or punish an adolescent into becoming intrinsically motivated, but sometimes they can encourage self-motivation by opening up an exposure or creating a circumstance that stimulates self-interest.
There
and then, and here's the crucial part, Trey, and then a parent must refrain from taking any ownership of its development. That, I think, is the toughest thing for us as parents, Trey, is because ultimately we kind of consider our kids the result of all our hard work
our
and effort.
Awesome sauce.
It's a reflection
I do.
Of
yeah,
me.
I absolutely do.
If my kid's successful, I want
that means
to
I was successful.
Himself, but it means I was successful as a parent. And while there is obviously some overlap and some bleed over, ultimately, if my kid's successful, I want them to carry that success on their own shoulders rather than – I mean, they can give me praise and you know, ultimately, you know, well, you know, how did you get to where – well, I want to thank God and my mama, you know. And that's great if they want to give credit for stuff. But ultimately, they're going to have to do it for themselves.
It was the choice. You know, this concept here that we're talking about, it's also the premise here that we talk over at the Family Podcast Network for our belief system in the Homestead to Gibson for unschooling. But I'm going to read that again. Y'all think about it in terms of unschooling. Parents cannot reward, push, punish an adolescent into, in this case, we'll say learning, but intrinsically into becoming intrinsically motivated. But sometimes they can encourage self-motivation by opening up an exposure or creating a circumstance that stimulates self-interest, right? So our job in terms of learning is to expose them to things that they're fascinated in, that they're interested in, that bring self-interest. Like, for instance, we talk about the story with Anna and how she taught herself how to read by bringing biology books in and we wouldn't read them to her. And that drove her nuts. So she learned how to read so that way she could get out those little safari expedition books. And that's what pushed her. It's the same mentality here that we're talking about. She became internally motivated. And when she became internally motivated, that 5 months we spent trying to make her learn how to read, where we were ready to punch ourselves in the flipping face, she figured it out in 3 months by herself, by her flipping self. It was amazing. But it's because it was an internal motivator, right? Self-interest. I'm interested in this, plus ownership. It's my job. Mom and Dad are not going to teach me how to read. But I love how they hit this here. They say about creating exposure, right? We have to expose them to those things. And like Jeff did with his son. I mean, you have to expose your kids to these opportunities to do the right thing for the right reason, not for the ice cream he could have bought them for, right? We have to expose our kids to the opportunity to do the right thing, even though there's nothing tangible they may ever receive out of it. We have to create those exposures so that way they find the self-interest in doing things that help others, right? And then getting to take ownership in that, I'm going to do this even if I don't get that ice cream or an M&M or whatever else for it.
Consider some of those intangibles you were talking about, Trey, that come from feeling good about ourselves. When our kids have that exposure to an opportunity where they can do things for the right reasons, they learn to develop a capacity to feel confidence in themselves.
That's
to create a mental record of I accomplished this and to know if I accomplish this, I can accomplish something else. And so it gives them that confidence invest in the personal growth to create future options for themselves. And Trey, nothing kills me more than to talk to a kid, especially in a therapeutic circumstance. And I ask them, you know, tell me about yourself, and they're hopeless about the future. You know, they're dealing with depression, or they've been told you're no good, right? And they've internalized that and believe it. And that's exactly the opposite of what we're trying to say here, that these experiences where we teach our kids to do things for the right reasons and they can feel what makes them feel good about things, Because it creates a future for them, and it doesn't leave them trapped in, I can't do for myself, I can't make my life any better. I mean, that's the essence of depression right there. So when they can develop an intrinsic motivation, they get a sense of the potential they have for themselves. And, you know, I think that's why parents sometimes, when they see their kids being apathetic, they see it as the enemy of ambition. And so they feel like they have to step in, you know.
That's right. That's
I can't let him Good give point. Up on himself. You know, if he doesn't try, he'll never find out what he's capable of. And while that's true, what we fail to understand as parents is that protective role that apathy can sometimes play in an adolescent's life, right? Now, what are they trying to protect against? Well, the risks of taking a commitment, you know?
Yeah.
The author of this article, Carl, what was his name? Carl Pickert, says that he once talked to a young person who stated this pretty well, his reason about ambivalence. He says, well, what if I give it my all and I don't do that good? I mean, do I really want to discover that? It feels safer to just get by.
Right? Yeah.
Right. So how do we handle that as parents? When our kids are at this point where they don't necessarily have the intrinsic motivation, and we don't want to handicap them by continually using extrinsic motivation, How do we turn it around? Well, that's the transition to our third article that we're going to mention in the show notes here today, and that's from Slate Magazine. They have an article or a section on family life and stuff, and this one is an article by Dan Griffin called "Motivating Teenagers: How Do You Do It?" He gives an example that I think a lot of parents can relate to, getting our kids to do their homework, right? Because homework. Don't know how it works in unschooling. I assume they're still teaching themselves stuff. But a lot of times when kids come home at the end of the day, they're not all that motivated to do. I mean, they're done with school stuff. They want to play and rest and stuff like that. But oftentimes they have things that we need to engage them with as parents. And so I know that I've done this. I've sat down with my kids and I've tried to help them through stuff. And sometimes you do get pushback, right? So Dan Griffin is talking in this article here on Slate Magazine about a couple whose son keeps getting distracted by YouTube, like stupid pet tricks he's watching on YouTube. And so they kind of turn themselves into like this tag team of trying to motivate him and threaten him. You know, it's like, come on, you know, as soon as you get your homework done, you can watch all the videos you want. You know, there's the motivation part,
right.
The cheerleading. You can do it. I know you can. And then, you know, they give him a little bit of time to do it. And then when he doesn't do it, they come back and they're like, all right, listen, if you don't get this done, you don't get to, right? And so there's the stick side of this, right? And I think a lot of parents can that resonates with them because they're trying. We do want our kids to be self motivated, but we find ourselves being stymied by their lack of ambition, by their inability to recognize all those things that we want them to get out of intrinsic motivation, and instead they just want to focus on the thing that makes them the happiest right now.
Yeah, that's good. You know, I was thinking about this. I've been reading a book recently. I think it's so easy for us to get desensitized to the idea of rewards and punishments, Jeff, because it's so commonly accepted, it's so commonly used, and it's really considered a mainstream tradition in parenting, and it's a sticky topic because we have to acknowledge that there's some cases that at least you endorse it in some as well, right? Jeff and I endorse it in some situations with young kids, and then we believe that we grow out of it. And so it's so multivariate here because it's so complicated to understand. And so it was really even hard for me as I was first reading through this, because I've always been a big, you know, the Pebble system. A lot of you guys listen over at FPN, and we've talked about the Pebble system that we used for a long time. I still have people emailing in talking about how, you know, effective that's been for some of their younger kiddos and whatnot. But it gets so difficult and hard to understand. But, you know, just this book that I was reading about was talking about a grant that was given out to everybody. And if all the different unions, which is their words for a state in this book, if all the different unions would accept, you know, this one formal way of teaching their kids through their brainwashing machine is what it was. You know, they hooked them up to a TV, but it would brainwash them. They're like, well, if you accept this, and we'll give you this amount of money to all the individuals that do it, we'll give this amount to your schools to pay for all these upgrades and all this other different stuff. And then if you choose not to do that, they're not just going to leave them alone, right? It's not a personal choice. They were going to increase taxes on them. This is everybody who decides not to do this, we're going to increase your taxes for the benefit of those who are choosing to educate their children the right way, is what they said. And so, right, I mean, we can hear a story like that and bristle, because we see it as something that we hate, something that we don't want, we can see that they're trying to dangle the carrot in front of him here to say, come here, but then hold the whip behind him and pop him, the stick behind him, and whack that donkey to get it to go where we want, right? And I think the human spirit is built in such a way where we loathe that. From the very time that we do it as little kids, I think we get to a point to where we acknowledge, I am no longer making my own decision. I'm making your decision through using pleasure or pain. And I think we hate that. I mean, it absolutely chagrins us. Am I saying that right? Chagrin?
Chagrin.
Chagrin. It actually chagrins us. I think I'm even making a whole new word out of this. But the point behind it is that it absolutely burns us, and we hate that mentality. And so it's so complex. It's so complex.
It is. We want to help our kids develop a sense of agency for their own sake and for their ability to function in society later. pardon me. So as we're looking at what it's going to take to help them be intrinsically motivated, the author of this article, Dan Griffin, is saying that he's a psychologist, and in his 30 years as a psychologist, what he's found is that parents will generally play one of two roles at any given time. Sometimes they'll trade off, but they're either a cheerleader, which their main goal is to keep spirits up and to tell their kids how great they are, right? We offer fun activities that are sometimes mildly challenging. As long as they learn that something positive just happened, you know, then that's – we're going to praise the effort, not the outcome, right? And we've even said that honestly, when it comes to praise, don't worry so much about the outcome. Praise the effort, right? Because we're going to teach them that effort is important. However, the other side of that is instead of being the cheerleader, sometimes the parent takes on the role of coach, and the coach's job is a little bit different. Their job is to win games, you know? and in the case of our kids, the job is to build character, right? And so there is the assumption built into that we're going to do our best, but sometimes we're going to fail. And part of character is learning that failure is not a bad thing, that failure helps us to learn, and it includes the desire to build willpower to do better and to delay gratification and to accept hardship as a part of life, right? And so, so far we've been talking about building intrinsic and extrinsic motivation in our kids, but it takes a sudden turn here, Trey, because this psychologist says when it comes down to it, a big deciding factor on whether or not our kids learn these things is not dependent on them, it's dependent on us as parents. Because, and this is the point that he makes,
here comes the bomb.
This is the part that I'm chagrined by, Trey. He says, so what can parents do? He says, ultimately, or unfortunately, it's really hard to motivate parents to shift from cheerleading to coaching, especially late in the game. I mean, by the time your kids get to adolescence and you're already getting pushback and seeing apathy. Yeah. And this is what I was saying earlier, that we need to start at a younger age trying to build in that intrinsic motivation, because it is no fun. It's not rewarding for the parent or for the kid.
That's right.
And it's also counterintuitive, because we've spent a decade, I mean, literally 10 years trying to help our kids be as happy as possible and to avoid failure and disappointment.
That's right.
Right. And so this transition requires us as parents to watch, he calls them train wrecks, minor, they might be minor, you know, just kind of slowing down on the track and having to clear things off. But it could be a major train wreck, you know, everything from, well, you missed an assignment, you got a bad grade, to, you know, they're discovering marijuana, right? And they're making bad decisions that way, right? And so this phase of parenting, this adolescence where we're having to really put our nose to the grindstone and try to develop this intrinsic motivation requires parents to tolerate, listen to this list he puts out here, anxiety, self-doubt, and failure, not just in their child, but it's even harder because we have to tolerate it in ourselves as parents.
That
is the kicker. We have to tolerate anxiety, self-doubt. And Trey, I've said this before, that a lot of the times what I see in how parents react to their kids is not necessarily their kid stuff. It's that parental anxiety. And you said it before. You know, when we're at the store and our kid's having a meltdown, we're not necessarily worried as parents. We're not worried that people are going to think our kid's horrible. Well, they're going to worry that we're horrible, right?
That's
we're bad parents. And so it's that anxiety in ourselves that we have to master in order to be able to respond to our kids and create those opportunities, to create that environment where they can learn to fail in a helpful way and to tolerate disappointment and self-doubt, so that they can learn to deal with those things rather than to never have to deal with those things and be crippled by them when they face them as adults.
So the question then that Jeff and I are pitching is, what if we started this entire episode over And we started this over that when the reality is we spend so much time talking about how to create intrinsic desires, intrinsic motivation in our children. And we've gone through all these things. What if we started over and said that it actually starts in us?
Yep.
The motivations that we have for the things that we do. You know, we talk about that all the time, is that there's two different ways. Jeff and I have said that 1,000 times on this show. There's two different ways to do every single behavior out there. So is it possible? So, and we always talk about it in terms of object and person, right? Is that are we seeing a person as a person? There's a person whose feelings and thoughts and matter, you know, and ideas matter just as much as ours do. Or are we seeing them maybe as an object, which is easier to do than we think? Mm-hmm. We see them as somebody who's not as important as me, and their thoughts and their feelings and their ideas are not as important as mine in this moment. We use the idea because I'm the parent in these types of cases, right? So the objectification of a person versus the, you know, the seeing them as a person. And so can you walk into it, and can you reward and punish a kid in such a way that you are seeing them as an object? I think we frequently and most often do. I think we walk into it as we don't want to look bad. We don't want our kids smoking dubs because it makes us look like we weren't there loving on them. All the things that we feel like we're doing right, it's internally motivated. It's about, I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look like the parent who was uninvolved. I don't want to look like the kid, you know, the dad who didn't spend enough time with my kid. So I must carrot and stick you into exactly what I want to do, because that convinces me that I can control how other people are going to see me.
And feel better about myself,
yeah. Right? And I think that Mr. Griffin here dropped the atom bomb on this entire discussion. What's your motivation behind everything that you're doing? Is it really about your kids, or is it really about not wanting to look bad? Now, guys, this is going to be one of those, you know, places where it's going to be real easy to run to justification. What I'm asking from every single listener of the Real Family Guys podcast today is to take a very honest assessment. Why do you reward or punish your kid? What's the real purpose here? Is it about teaching and educating and disciplining them so that way they can know what the right reasons to do things are? Or is it about wanting to look good? And guys, I raise my hand as being one of the first people to admit that I am guilty,
sure,
of wanting to look good, because I run a website, right? This is where we talk about. I should know what I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, stick that in your pipe and smoke it this week.
You know, Trey, it's funny as you're saying that. Last night, as I was explaining to a friend of mine what the podcast was going to be about motivating kids, Mary Hannah was sitting there on the floor drawing on her graphics tab and I told her, Mary Hannah, it's almost 11. I mean, bedtime was half an hour ago. So I'm telling you, you need to turn things off and put it away. And she said, okay, I'm almost there. Just a minute. Okay, now here I am. I'm sitting here in front of friends.
You've dropped the phrase already.
I have.
It's out there already.
I have. And this is, whew, Trey, let me tell you. And so here I am feeling this pressure of, what if my child doesn't respond to me? Right?
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be the quote unquote expert here. And so I let it go for about 3 minutes, and the whole time I'm sitting there just kind of watching the clock, 3 minutes, which should have been plenty of time for her to wrap up what she was doing and shut things down. I'm not going to go over and slam the computer lid closed and, you know, on the laptop or anything. But after 3 minutes, I said, all right, Marianne, it's been several minutes and you should have found a stopping point already. And she goes, I know, Dad, I'm almost done. Right? Now this should sound familiar, because I guarantee I'm not the only one who's ever heard a parent or a kid say this to me, right? And so instead I started saying, you know, Mariana, we're going to talk about motivation and what motivates, because I could, you know, be the dad that comes over there and makes stuff happen. But what I would like to happen instead is for you to be able to say, wow, you know, Dad's not trying to be mean. He's trying to be helpful. And he's giving me an opportunity to be Mary Hannah controlled instead of that. And so I just kind of kept talking, and she's rolling her eyes and she's shutting things down. And she goes, okay, I'm emailing this to myself. I'm done. And the whole time I'm just like, and because not only would that make me happy, but I think you'd feel better about yourself. And she's just like, yes, Dad, I get it. You know, I hear exactly what you're saying. And so, you know, to sum up what we're talking about here, parenting is hard. Parenting an adolescent, especially when we face the brick wall of their apathy and motivational stuff, is something that can be disheartening to us, because it makes us feel like failures as parents.
Right,
we also want our kids to be able to succeed. And so acknowledging that there's a transition that happens, and not overnight, but it's a transition that happens over the course of a long time, over several years, as our kids move into a place where they developmentally should have more autonomy and can make their own decisions. We, as parents, need to grow into a way of creating situations that they can learn to do things for the right reasons, and they can learn to build that self-confidence and that desire in themselves to do the right things, because it makes them feel good and it affects their relationships with others. When we provide those opportunities, My supposition is that our kids will become more intrinsically motivated, and that we will have to do less didactic parenting, telling them what to do, and more parenting of encouraging and supporting the decisions that they're making as they get a little bit older. And so that's our encouragement to our listeners, is to recognize that question Trey was asking earlier. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I using the carrot and stick approach? And is there a way that I can start transitioning so that I can help my kids to have experiences where they can develop that intrinsic motivation? Because not only will it be healthier for them, it'll be healthier for you.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think it'll be healthier for our society if we have people that are well-regulated and autonomous.
Love it. All right, guys, that's all that we have for this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. Guys, as always, we hope to hear back from you on this. Hey, if you got some contrary ideas, shoot them our way. We love to talk about this. We love to have some buff back or some Trey, I disagree, here's why. Let's talk about this. Jeff and I love to reason things out, so let's visit. Also, if you have any questions or comments about this, feel free to send those comments in the ways we talked at the very start of the show. We'd love to hear your thoughts and process. What else do you want us to talk about, too? We'd love that as well. Don't get me wrong. Jeff and I will never run out of topics. That's just a promise. We love this stuff way too much. However, we do want to be talking about the things that are pertinent to you in these moments, so shoot those on over to us. We'd love to talk about it. All right, guys. Well, I hope if nothing else, you guys have a great day and a great week. And if nothing else, we'll see you guys next Friday.
Happy birthday, Mary Hannah.